Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
I'm a linguist at one of the top universities in the country. That means I study languages. My specific field of expertise is the translation of ancient and dead languages. Greek, Latin, cuneiform, that kind of thing. I will not divulge specifics, such as my name or the school where I do my research. But it should suffice to say I hold a place of prestige in my field. Last week, I received a call from my old college classmate. He had gone into aeronautics while I pursued my studies, and he eventually ended up at NASA. We'd been friends in our school days, but after college, we had only kept a loose sort of contact. But that week, he called me with an almost fearful edge in his voice. "Listen, I wouldn't be calling you about this if I thought anyone else could handle it," he had said. "But you are one of the top men in your field, so we feel your skills are suited to the unique situation we face." When I pressed him for details, he had remained tight-lipped. He told me that if I accepted the job, then there would be a plane waiting for me at the nearest airport within 6 hours. I admit that accepting this job was out of character for me, but my professional curiosity had been piqued. If this was something that demanded my skills, then I'd almost an obligation to investigate. I had noticed the use of the word "we," though. When I arrived at the airport and saw that I was flying in a private plane with men in black suits, it became obvious that this involved some of my friends' work at NASA. I was flying for several hours before the jet landed at a small rural airport. There were more men in black suits waiting for us. They instructed me to take the back seat in a Humvee with tinted windows. I was then driven for another several hours until the men parked the car and instructed me to step out the vehicle. I did, and it took a couple of seconds for my eyes to adjust to the bright sunlight. I looked around. The Humvee was parked in the middle of a green field. There was a small shed nearby. It looked rickety, close to the point of falling over. "Walk into the shed and take the trowel off the wall," one of the men said. "I'm sorry," I had replied. But the man remained silent. Apparently, those were all the instructions I was going to get. So, I walked into the shed. It was surprisingly spacious. I looked around, and sure enough, there was a trowel hanging on the wall. I took it off cautiously. Nothing happened for a moment. Then, I almost lost my footing as the whole floor of the shed began to move down, like an elevator. I was descending through this elevator shaft for a minute or two. The walls were concrete, with lights strategically placed to light the whole shaft. The platform finally stopped in front of some elevator doors. They slid open. I walked through, and I was now standing in an observation room, overlooking what looked like a mission control room. Men and women were huddled over dizzyingly complex consoles, analyzing streams of data that rushed across their screens. Massive screens were hung up on the wall, showing maps of the Earth and another planet that I did not recognize. Astronomy was never my field of expertise. As I stepped through the elevator's door, jaw dropped in awe at the complexity of the mission control room. Everyone in the observation room turned to look at me. I tore my gaze away from mission control and looked around. The observation room was occupied by scientists in lab coats and what appeared to be military officials. A man that I recognized as a general, due to the stars on his shoulder, walked up to me. "So, you must be the linguist. We were told you'd be arriving about now." The general extended his hand, and I shook it. Then, one of the men wearing lab coats walked up to me. It took me a second to recognize this man as my friend, because we had not seen each other in so long. "I'm glad you decided to answer my call," my friend said. "We need your help." Look, this is clearly some advanced operation, either for the military or space exploration, I replied. I don't understand what you would want my skills for. The general and my friend looked at each other, and then back to me. You'll want to sit down, my friend said. I took a seat, and so did my friend and the general. You've been granted clearance for what I'm about to tell you, and you must never tell another living soul, my friend said. We've developed an experimental material for space probes. It's an alloy 100 times stronger than steel, and NASA decided to put it to the greatest stress test available. The planet Venus. I nodded my head, trying to recall what I'd learned about Venus in school. I knew that the atmospheric pressure was strong enough to crush almost anything, that there was a high level of volcanic activity, and that it rained in acid. In short, the perfect place to test how durable a material is. We constructed a rover out of this alloy, and we deployed it to the surface of the planet, my friend said. It survived, and for the last few weeks, we've been driving it around Venus, collecting all sorts of samples and taking many photos. If this has happened, how come it's not all over the news? I asked. The general cut in to explain. We didn't want to expose the fact that we now have a material that is so far ahead of what anyone else has, the general said. We believe it has applications beyond space exploration, so revealing it to the wider public would give away our tactical advantage. I see, but you haven't explained why you need me, I said. That was going to be the next part, my friend said. He got up from his seat and walked up to an intercom. He pressed the button and spoke into a microphone. Please, bring up the picture, my friend said, his voice echoing into the mission control room. A scientist tapped some buttons at a console, and an image took up one of the large screens on the wall. The image showed a desolate landscape. It must have been taken from a high place because the camera appeared to be gazing down into a valley. The sky was a sickly yellow, and the ground was made of black rock and dirt. But as I looked closely at the image, I realized something. The rocks in the valley were arranged in specific ways, ways that could not have been the result of whatever nature existed on Venus. And then I realized something. These were symbols. Now, do you understand why I called? My friend said. My friend took me to a conference room in the facility. There was a large whiteboard on one of the walls of the room, filled with various notes and observations about the symbols. He explained that they'd been trying to figure out what the symbols meant for a week, and they'd hit a dead end. That is why they called me. As my friend was explaining this, more people started to file into the room. My friend introduced me to them one by one. They were all fellow linguists that my friend had contacted. He had apparently gotten around academia after we separated and had made some contacts. All the other linguists were recommended to him by other professors at some of the top schools in the country. They had already been briefed. So, once introductions were out of the way, my friend left me alone with the team. We began to debate all the possible meanings of the symbols. What many people outside of my field fail to understand is that there is a lot more to translation than simply directly interpreting the words of a language and converting them into another language. For example, when starting from square one, with a language no one has seen before, you must determine the most basic things. Are the letters read left to right, right to left, up to down, down to up? There are whole concepts and ideas that can only be properly expressed in a particular language. So, as you can imagine, translating a set of symbols from another world without some kind of Rosetta Stone to give us a frame of reference is incredibly difficult. We worked on the symbols for hours. We tried comparing them to every language on Earth, but there was simply no way to confirm any of our guesses. We had no one who could read or write the language to confirm our guess, and we had no other examples of similar symbols. No matter what we tried, we came up empty-handed. It was like we were bashing our heads into a brick wall. After a while, we were just sitting at the conference table in silence. Occasionally, someone would pipe up, trying to suggest something, but the words would die in their throat as they realized we had already tried that. As we sat there, I tried to come up with reasons we weren't able to make any progress. I was forced to come to the same conclusion I suspect the other people in the team had come to. The symbols were truly alien. The reason there was no comparison to anything on Earth is because they weren't from Earth. If there are some things that couldn't be communicated across languages here on Earth, then how could we hope to receive a communication with an alien culture? And then, I thought about the implications of this, and those implications quickly became unnerving. Were there once aliens inhabiting Venus, before it became a wasteland? Were they responsible? Had they left some kind of warning? Something to let other species know what had ruined them? Were we trying to translate a warning? But as I was pondering this, my friend burst into the conference room, startling us out of our stupor. It was clear he'd been running because he was breathing heavily. "There's been a development," my friend said. My friend escorted me and the linguistics team back to the observation room, and in a single moment, my worldview was shattered. There was a live video feed of the symbols. The rover had been parked in front of them for a day now, and standing behind the symbols, looking at the rover, was a man. The man's skin was black like the rock that made up the ground, and it looked like he was made of rock too. There was no hair on him, and he was looking at the rover with a cautious look in his eyes. Everyone in mission control and the observation room was silent. You could have heard a pin drop. And then, the man began to walk towards the rover. He stepped carefully over the symbols, clearly taking great care not to ruin them. When he was standing in front of the rover, he squatted down and looked directly into the rover's camera. His face was remarkably human-like, even with a rocky skin. "Kurak sendetogapi," the man said in a guttural voice. "Gasenda teras." "What's it saying, Professor?" the general asked me. But I was speechless. I was looking at an alien. And not only that, a sentient one, capable of communication, living on the most inhospitable planet in the solar system. After a while, I responded to the general's question. "I have no idea." My friend walked up to the intercom and pressed some buttons. He then pressed the button to talk and spoke into the microphone. "Hello? Can you understand this message?" The message was broadcasted through the rover's speakers. The alien stumbled backwards, tripping over a rock. He quickly got back to his feet and walked back up to the rover. "Kurak sendetogapi," the alien repeated, slowly this time, as if he was trying to make it easier for us to understand what he was saying. I'm sorry, we don't know what you're saying," my friend said into the microphone. The alien looked disappointed. It stepped back from the rover and sat on the ground. It looked down to the ground, clutching its head in its hands. It sat like that for a few moments before he looked back up at the rover. He seemed to be in deep thought. Then he grinned. He stood up and began walking away from the rover. He stopped after a short distance and then gestured for the rover to follow it. The rover followed the alien through the Vesuvian landscape. The sounds of volcanoes erupting could be heard in the distance through the microphones on the rover. Eventually, the alien led the rover up a steep hillside and paused at the top of the hill to allow the rover to catch up. When the rover finally crested the hill, it was looking down into a small valley. And at the bottom of the valley was a small spacecraft of some kind. It looked like a gleaming silver teardrop lying at the bottom of a small crater. There appeared to be a kind of door built into the side, but it was closed. "Sarek Zukat," the alien said. It hurried down the hillside towards the teardrop. The rover followed it, going slowly down the hill so that it wouldn't slip. When it reached the bottom, the camera showed that the alien had opened the door in the side of the teardrop and was now examining its interior. It emerged after a few seconds later, holding a small black box. The box had a red button, yellow button, and green button on its side, with two red cylinders coming out of the top. The alien pressed the green button and set the box on the ground. The box played a loud, high-pitched tone, and then it was silent. "Hello," the alien said in a low, gravelly voice. "Can you understand me?" My friend hurriedly pressed the button on the intercom. "Yes, yes, we can understand you," he said in an excited tone. "Oh, praise the mother," the alien said, sounding elated. "Someone has finally seen my message and come for me. I've been here for so, so long." "I'm sorry," my friend said. "Why would someone come for you? Are you not a native of this world?" "Oh, mother, no," the alien said. "I've been stranded here for I don't know how long." Everyone in the room looked at each other. Then my friend turned back to the intercom. "I'm sorry, but this isn't a rescue mission. We found you on accident." The look of hope on the alien's face was dashed in an instant. He looked crushed. He sat down on the ground. He looked down at the dirt for a while. "What planet does this craft hail from?" the alien said after a while. "Earth," my friend said. "The third planet in the solar system." The alien suddenly laughed. His voice was a deep, booming noise. "Well, isn't this simply cosmic?" the alien said. "Of course, I'm finally found by you." "What do you mean?" my friend said. The alien looked straight into the rover's camera, a grin on its face. "Your planet was my original destination. I suppose I owe you my story," the alien said. "I have not talked to anyone in so long."
"Yes, please," my friend said. "We would love to hear your story."
"We?" the alien asked.
"I'm speaking from a room with several representatives from our planet," my friend said. "We can all see and hear you through this rover."
"I see," the alien said. He grinned and waved at the rover. "Hello, people of the planet Earth. It's lovely to finally meet you." The general moved my friend aside so he could speak into the intercom. "Son, you better explain why you're trying to come to our planet."
"Yes, yes, I suppose I should explain myself," the alien said. "I imagine that I gave you quite the shock, both with my appearance and my statement."
The alien took a deep breath.
"Well then, let's start from the beginning. My name is Kugan Tikka. It means one who gazes into the distance in my language. I lived on a prosperous world. We'd achieved a harmony in our planet. We drew energy from the light of our star and the movements of our oceans. I was a scientist working in the field of aeronautics. We had achieved space travel, and we were on our way to establishing permanent settlements on other planets in our solar system. But then, our planet began to collapse. Unforeseen geological forces began to tear it apart. Evacuation was our only option. Our most brilliant minds were selected for a special treatment. Each person would be given their own indestructible pods, where they would be put into stasis and be sent out into the cosmos. The goal was to preserve some of our species, knowledge, and culture, and spread it throughout the galaxy. We were also given a special serum. When our pods landed on an alien world, it would take readings of the atmosphere and environmental conditions around it. Then the serum would be injected into us, transforming our biology
so we could thrive on this new world. I was chosen to be sent to a nearby habitable world to spread our species' knowledge with the low-level sentient life forms that live there. Your Earth. But something must have gone wrong with my journey. My part veered off course, and I crashed here instead. He gestured around at the barren landscape. The serum made me practically immortal and self-sufficient so that I could survive here. But that is all I'm doing. Surviving. Hoping someone, anyone, would come take me away from here. He looked down at the ground again. He was despondent. After a while, he looked back up into the camera. His expression was one of the deepest despair I've ever seen. "Please, help me," he said, his voice nearly breaking. I can't be alone anymore. I just can't. Everyone in the observation room looked at each other. Some were nearly on the verge of tears, but the general was just looking at him on the screen, occupied with a stoic expression on his face. Finally, he pressed the button on the intercom. "We'll do what we can." After their conversation, I was quickly escorted out of the observation room, along with all the other linguists. Our services were no longer required. I was escorted back to another black Humvee with more men in dark suits. On the drive to the airport, they told me that I could never tell another soul what I had witnessed, or else they would make sure I was never heard from again. But after that encounter, I caught myself looking up into the night sky more often. How could I rest knowing that there was someone up there, simply waiting to die or be rescued? I hope I've taken the necessary precautions so that I can share my story, so that I could pass the burden of this knowledge onto you. I would feel better if more knew about what keeps me up at night, knew about the one who is trapped on a dead world, waiting for us to come save him.